So on Monday, we brought you the story that Gardaí were investigating, still are investigating, two break-ins at Sarsfield's GAA Club in Newbridge. They happened over the weekend. They happened in the early hours of Sunday morning at approximately 5 a.m. and the early hours of Monday morning at approximately 5:15. So on the Sunday morning, the clubhouse was broken into with a quantity of alcohol taken. And then on the Monday morning, another break-in occurred, but Gardaí noted the premises were ransacked and nothing was actually taken. We were speaking to the chairperson of the club, Brendan Ryan, on Monday afternoon. He went into, you know, things like the additional security. If the club was to get CCTV, it would cost an estimated €30,000. Now, Gardaí are confirming that investigations are ongoing, but during my interview with Brendan, he mentioned the house, or the derelict house, or the derelict site beside Sarsfields, just adjacent to it when you're looking at the clubhouse from the road to the left of it. And Newbridge-based Senator Fiona O'Loughlin gave an update, or sent in an update, I should say, on this yesterday. And I did yesterday receive an email from Kildare County Council. I sent them an email on Monday afternoon about the situation. Brendan thought it may be in ownership, or the council may be in ownership of the site. And if it is owned by Kildare County Council, what is currently being done to prevent the antisocial behaviour on the property, and can timeline details be issued? That's what I was asking, because many people will know that house or derelict site, whichever way you want to word it, has been set alight a good few times. And I did receive a reply yesterday afternoon, evening, and from Kildare County Council. They say, "Good evening, Ciara. Thank you for your query. We can confirm that the property referred to you in the email is not a Kildare County Council property. Local authorities are responsible for investigating reports of derelict sites in their area, and we can confirm that this property is currently being investigated by Kildare County Council under the Derelict Sites Act." And good afternoon to you, Fiona O'Loughlin, because you had an update on this yesterday. How are you?
Good afternoon, Ciara. I'm very good. Thank you very much. And just relaxing here on a lovely sunny afternoon in Newbridge. And obviously, you know, really disturbed to hear about the break-in in Sarsfields. You know, when we have great community sporting facilities like that, it's just shocking when they're broken into. They're all run by volunteers putting huge time, effort, energy and enthusiasm into ensuring that we have those facilities for young and old. And it's shocking then when they are disregarded and disrespected in such an awful way. So just in relation to this particular site, and it was a lovely family home, and many of us would have memories of it when it was.
Yeah,
such. And
like it's really like a 180, the difference in the past few years.
Oh, it's really, really sad to see it.
Yeah.
Because it was a lovely home, a lovely vibrant
it
building.
It was. I've actually been in the house, you know. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, and a local,
so it's quite sad to see that. Yeah, yeah.
It's really, really sad. And while, you know, maybe driving by in the car, we'd all notice that it had fallen into, you know, dereliction or disuse. But when you actually go and explore as far as you can, it's shocking to see how bad it was. And particularly when I was speaking to residents in the new estate beside it, White Oaks, and then, of course, we've Station Walk right beside it as well, too. And particularly with White Oaks, they were really very concerned because, as you said, there were some fires started there. The houses in White Oaks are very, very close to there. So, you know, in the event of a big fire, there would be, like, sadly, you know,
some people would be at risk in that estate.
Spread,
yeah.
over to, yeah, White Oaks. So started,
and Fiona, if you look at just that area in general, you know, you've got, you know, the Station Walk. A few people are already resident there, but, you know, the building is continuing. Mm. Then you've got White Oaks. Then you've got Rosebery Hill. There are three massive estates.
And Skullinavillig.
And three massive estates, Fiona, in the past 15, 20 years.
True.
That were not
True.
There at the time when Sarsfields GAA Club obviously was established.
That's Absolutely correct. Yeah, like that was really on the edge of Newbridge at that particular time, and there weren't any housing past it. So it is, as you say, you know, when we see now that really Newbridge has been very much developing that side in terms of all the houses around it. And it has, like, you know, this particular site has a very negative impact, both, you know, on the social and on the visual side. And then, unfortunately, when you have a situation like that, it does attract antisocial behaviour. It does attract then people that are essentially up to no good, like, you know, lighting fires. You know, we're not suggesting, you know, for a definite that that was associated, obviously, with the Sarsfields break-in, but it certainly wouldn't help matters. But, you know, I was in contact with Kildare County Council, and I'm sure that many others were also. But just in terms of that engagement, I am really glad that this site has been entered onto the Derelict Sites Register. So basically at the moment, what that means is presently there's 25 sites that are actually on the County Kildare Register. And so now there is an advertisement to put this particular site on the register. What that means is from the 27th of July, when the notice went up at the site and would have been publicly advertised both on local papers and on Kildare County Council website, etc., it's giving people, the owners, 1 month to come forward to make a case as to what they are going to do with that particular site and to claim ownership. And basically, if there isn't a response, and if there isn't, let's just say, a positive engagement about what can happen so that Kildare County Council would see that possibly the landowners do have something in mind that might add to the area, what would happen then is that the there would be a market value. So a local estate agent would be engaged to put a market value on the site. That would go up in the register, and essentially then 7% of the market value would be put as a fine against the ownership of the building. And this would happen on an annual basis, and interest indeed would be charged also. And it can actually go up to 10%. Mm. So this was brought in 1990, I think it was. And essentially, mm-hmm. it really is to try to make sure that we don't have derelict sites. So it's an incentive to those that own these sites to actually clean them up and do something positive with them.
Fiona, tell me what the residents of White Oaks are noting about the situation with that derelict site in particular.
Well, they were particularly concerned because of the fires that had happened there. And when you walk into White Oaks, which is a really lovely estate, there's a very vibrant residents association, and they had a multicultural day there about 6 weeks ago. And really, really lots of enthusiasm and a great little community among themselves. Really lovely new house. But when you walk along it, you see that the side and the back, indeed, of a number of the houses are very, very close to this derelict site. So there is, like, obviously that whole antisocial thing where rubbish can be dumped, etc., and is then very close to the back of these residents. The biggest fear was about the potential for fire, particularly, you know, with all the dry weather that we've had, to actually, you know, enter into the premises then, the residents mm-hmm. of White Oaks. So they're very concerned. And that's quite apart from the visual impact. It's not nice for anybody to be living in a situation, you know, where they pass by this, they see this all the time. It attracts rodents, it attracts dumping. So they are concerned about it, but they would be pleased to see that Kildare County Council have taken action in relation to it.
Okay, yes, and they have. And thank you for joining me this afternoon, Fiona O'Loughlin. Obviously, Fianna Fáil Senator for Kildare. So she is noting that the owner does have a month, 30 days, 31 days, whichever, and it was dated dated on the 27th of July this year. So that means today's the 25th of August. So hopefully by the end of the weekend, beginning of next week, we'll have an update on that. And as Fiona went into all the details, if the property is entered on the derelict sites register, then the council's, the market value of it will be established, and then a levy will be charged at the rate of 7% of the market value of the property concerned annually, and at a rate up to 10%. Again, that's determined by the local authority for subsequent years. It was announced on Tuesday afternoon that motorists who fail to stop at a school warden's sign will now see their fines doubled from €80 to €160. It's that time of year again. People are getting back to school and they're being urged to watch out for children on the roads when the new school year does fully get underway, I guess you could say. And yesterday afternoon, we did receive a press release from Kildare County Council welcoming the announcement to increase those fines. And Declan Keogh is the road safety officer with KCC. Good afternoon to you, Declan.
Good afternoon, Ciara.
So obviously the reason for this is to keep those on our roads as safe as possible, both the motorists and the pedestrians. And there are over 400 school wardens employed by local authorities across this country. How many here in Kildare?
There's 28 in Kildare, Ciara.
And on average, Declan, in previous years, how many fines would be issued?
Over the last few years, 2022 currently, there's been 13 penalty points issued nationally, none in Kildare, thankfully. In 2021, there's 13 again, and in 2020, there's been 12. So they're the, the figures that we have at the moment of penalty points issued to drivers who fail to stop for a school warden sign.
And Declan, are there certain schools in this county that are affected the most by motorists ignoring signs or wardens being extremely important to a certain area?
Well, I suppose every warden is as important as the other, and that goes without saying. There are areas in the county where there's an element of driver behaviour which causes concern, North Kildare in particular, for some reason. We've had incidents where drivers fail to stop for the school warden sign, or in more dangerous situations where the warden is actually on the school crossing with the stop sign up and children are caught crossing and a driver basically drives through. Now that puts the school warden at risk, and it also puts the vulnerable road users who are school children at risk as well. At the moment there is a case going before the courts, or it's in the process of going, where a driver may be prosecuted for doing the very, very same thing where he drove through a school crossing. That is in North Kildare. And previously in Derry, in turn, we had another incident which I suppose made national headlines as well, where a school warden had to physically grab a child out of the way of a moving car, a driver which failed to stop. Look, at every crossing is there are risks at every crossing, but we are encouraging and appealing to drivers to watch out for the school wardens, watch out around schools, and obey and follow the instructions of a school warden. Many people don't know or don't realise, Ciara, that under Section 96 of the 1961 Road Traffic Act, by law, a driver must and should slow down and stop when required and requested to do so by a school warden.
And, you know, you've noted just how important the wardens are to this whole country, but they're vulnerable road users themselves. They're road workers, I guess you'd word it as.
They are indeed. They're lone workers and they're vulnerable road users. Now, when I say they work on their own, they're not actually alone, because there is a support mechanism behind that. School wardens get site visits from myself or a school warden crossing supervisor. But as well as that, they're in the community. They're under the watchful eye of parents and school principals and so on. So although they are working on their own, they're never alone. And there is a good, I suppose, support mechanism behind that. But the fact that school warden is out there in all sorts of weather, they are a great asset to the community. They're very, very important, and they play an important role in the community in providing safety for school children crossing the road.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me today. That is Declan Keogh. Of course, he's Kildare County Council's road safety officer. And as he said, these school wardens play such a huge role in our communities, and they provide a life-saving role for primary school students, it's also noted as. And they're affectionately known to children, as we know, as the lollipop man or lady or person, whichever way you want to say it. And they're going to be returning for duty when the new school term begins next week. Drivers, they're being reminded of the extra pedestrians, bicycles, and of course just motorist vehicle traffic on the school routes. In addition to other modes of transport, such as those e-scooters, keep that in mind, then the cycle buses and the walking buses. And drivers are asked to observe and obey the instructions of a school warden and allow plenty of room at school crossings for pedestrians to cross the road. So the fines will now be doubled from €80 to €160. My next guest is a humanist celebrant, and I was reading an article about a County Kildare couple who had decided to have a baby naming ceremony instead of, I guess you could say, kind of in place of a baptism maybe. So to let people know what humanism is, I just had a look here, and the Bristol Humanist Group defines it as an approach to life based on reason and our common humanity, recognising that moral values are properly founded on human nature and experience alone. Siobhan Walls, it's very nice to speak with you this afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Ciara. And hello to you.
And would you back up that definition?
Pretty much. It's pretty much along the lines of what I would say in my opening words of every ceremony. I would say, yeah, it's based on values found in you, the people I'm talking to, in people themselves, without any reference to any higher authority, if you like, that people themselves have a good sense of how to live a good life.
Yeah. And Siobhan, how did you become a humanist celebrant?
I was raised Catholic, but like a lot of people, I moved away from that as a teenager, and I just never moved back. I took a bit of a circuitous route to humanism, and I have two children myself. They're both adults now, and I actually had naming ceremonies for them because I knew I didn't want to have them baptized. And then really, I suppose, it was when my mother died, which is now 16 years ago, I realized that I actually was an atheist. And that led me to, I suppose, saying, well, more than an atheist, I was a humanist. So it was about, you know, living that good life based on human values.
And obviously these baby naming ceremonies are similar in a lot of ways to a baptism. But talk us through it, because the Keenan family did speak to the Irish Examiner over the past few days. And they had a little boy, Finn, and they are living in Naas in County Kildare, Aoife and her partner, I believe, Carl. And they decided to go ahead with this baby naming ceremony.
That's right. I mean, I had actually met Aoife and Carl in 2017 because I married them then. They had their wedding in a venue in Galway, actually. But they're more from the eastern side of the country, Dublin and Kildare, I think. And then they contacted me again about doing a naming ceremony for Finn. So that happened on the 2nd of July. It was actually in County Wicklow that the ceremony happened, but near enough to them in Blessington.
Yeah, Blessington Lakes had a fabulous venue. Yeah, that's stunning.
Yeah, it is. It was an absolutely gorgeous venue. I mean, they were having a big family party. And that, back to your original question, yeah, to me, the focus of a naming ceremony, the most important thing to do, regardless, you know, of anybody's belief system, I think the most important thing to do when there's a new baby is to gather family and friends together to celebrate that baby. And that's what's really important, and that's what a naming ceremony allows people to do. Obviously, in most cases, the child is already legally named, and they've had a birth certificate and all of that long before this ceremony happens. So there's no legal aspect to it or anything, but we call it a naming ceremony because, you know, that comes, I suppose, from the religious tradition of christening, when the name was given from a religious perspective. Mm-hmm. But it's really about having a celebration for the child.
I mean, people just want to have celebrations. I don't know if it's because of the past 2.5 years. I think that really adds to it as well. And in regards to these celebrations, do you ever find that there are negative reactions in terms of why somebody would choose that? Because when you go against the grain, some people can, I guess, get their backs up.
Of course. course. Well, I mean, I think it's more that sometimes people, I mean, I come across this in wedding ceremonies, I do as well. Sometimes people, when you know, the people getting married or the people having a naming ceremony for their baby have made the decision that that's in line with their views. Sometimes their parents or indeed grandparents can have reservations and can be worried about, you know, the child not being baptized, if that is their very, very strong belief. I mean, I tell you, in my own case, my son is now 33. So when he wasn't baptized, he was a bit unusual back then. And I'm pretty certain he was held over more than one kitchen sink by people who were sincerely concerned that I wasn't having him baptized. But I mean, the world has changed an awful lot since then.
Can I ask you, was your mother, you're saying you were raised Catholic, were your parents or, you know, your guardians, one of those who questioned you making that decision?
No, it wasn't my own family. No, it wasn't. It was, you know, it was actually mothers of friends, people I knew very well, one of whom actually minded my son. But I mean, I don't know that for certain. I just knew they were very concerned. And I wouldn't be surprised if I heard that they had had done that just from things they said. But by the same token, they came to the naming ceremony I devised for myself. That was the very first one I ever did. And they thoroughly enjoyed it. And that's what you were asking me as well. In more recent times now, when I'm doing this as my job, yes, I would often enough encounter people that I talk to, you know, after the ceremony or before, who might have some concerns. But I will tell you, without exception, they are always very happy with the ceremony and think it is very special, and the focus is very much on the child and the child's place in the family and the wider community. And I would have to say I've never had a situation, the only situation I can think of was actually at a wedding where somebody was a little bit sniffy because the couple hadn't gone to a church. But, you know, I've never encountered that at an naming ceremony. No, people who have a lot of reservations until they actually sit through the ceremony and just see that it is a thing that has ritual and ceremony to it, and it's very much about welcoming and honouring the child into the family and the community.
Now, these ceremonies, they're definitely increasing in the country. In 2007, yourselves at the Humanist Association conducted 4, and 10 years later, it had risen to 107. Now, 2022 estimates predict between 170 and 180 by the end of the year. Yourself, Siobhan, how many have you done so far this year, and how many more will you do or have in the diary for the next 3-4 months?
I have done 13 already this year, and I would expect probably to be around approaching the 20 mark by the end of the year.
And those who want to get their child named in a baby naming ceremony, do they have to be of the humanist belief? Can they be somebody that follows another religion and may want to do that?
Well, I would say, I mean, again, the same would apply for weddings or indeed funerals that I also conduct on a regular enough basis, that there isn't a rule that says you have to sign up to be a member of the Humanist Association or you have to sign here to declare that your beliefs are the same. But the ceremonies are designed for people who share the same beliefs. They may not use the label humanist, but that's what they are designed for. And while in a wedding, you might often enough come across people who do tell you quite openly that they hold other religious beliefs, they just want to keep religion out of their wedding ceremony for whatever reason. It could be they come from different religious backgrounds. It could be they just want to celebrate their wedding that day. But it is very unusual, you know, to have either that start of life or end of life ceremony where somebody would choose it if it wasn't, in fact, in line with their own outlook on life and their own beliefs.
And in terms of the children or the baby's age, do you have to be that of a baby, quote unquote? Or can you be, you know, 15 getting involved or receiving?
Well, it would be unusual to be 15. I mean, there are, I actually have a ceremony coming up. I did one only a couple of weeks ago for two little girls who were sisters, one of whom was born in 2020, and 2020 being what it was, they just never happened. And then her little sister was born, so that there were two children in the same family. And I'm doing one in a few weeks for three children in the same family. Again, the pandemic sort of got in the way. And I've often done namings for children who are 2, and the eldest in that family I just mentioned, I think, will be 5. In any case, to say about 15, no, I don't think you'd have that, but like myself and my colleagues in the Humanist Association of Ireland will devise a ceremony for any milestone in life. And what can happen at that age, 15, is what we might call a coming of age.
Yeah, like the quinceañera, the Mexican tradition, isn't it?
Yes, and I know the Humanist Association in Norway actually does a lot of they have this coming of age ceremony. I mean, it's kind of like, I suppose, the confirmation in the Christian tradition, but more at the age where the Protestant community would do it, so sort of early teen years, as opposed to the Catholic tradition would be more sort of when you're still in primary school that you'd do the confirmation. So there is a tradition, and I know some individual of my colleagues have done these for children who are early teens, mid-teens, who want to, like I say, it's very popular in Norway, who want to confirm this is my belief system and have a ceremony to mark that.
And Siobhan, just coming back into the school season, is the entry to certain schools a barrier maybe to people wanting to have a baby naming ceremony and feel like they have to get their child baptised to get a place
in school? It certainly has been. The law actually changed on that a few years ago. I can't actually think of exactly when it changed, but it did change quite recently, where now the patron of a school, and the vast majority of our primary schools have Catholic patronage, but the patron of a school can no longer discriminate against accepting a child into the community. It does apply. Minority school religions can still discriminate, on the basis of allowing children of their own faith system in first. But the Catholic Church that runs the majority of schools can no longer do that. So it used to be a case, there definitely were people up till a few years ago having their children baptised so that they'd be able to produce the baptism cert to go to their local school, which happened to be a Catholic school. But that no longer is allowed, and it can't happen anymore. I mean, the school will still be instructing the children in the Catholic faith, but they can't actually stop the child from becoming a pupil at that school.
Really lovely to speak with you this afternoon. So interesting. That is Siobhan Walls. She is a humanist celebrant, and we're speaking there about the baby naming ceremonies that are, I guess, the humanist version of a baptism or a christening. And a local couple here in County Kildare, Aoife and Carl Keenan, recently had one with Siobhan herself over at Blessington Lakes to name their little son Finn. And there's a gorgeous photo of Finn on the Irish Examiner's website at home there in Naas in County Kildare.
Phone call is a bit short on headroom
for our unbeatable offers.
Style, design inspiration and incredible savings in store. Easy living.
Georgie. New research today is revealing 80% of office workers want to have the choice to work from home. It's a study by Trinity College and the National Transport Authority. It's showing 77.9% of workers surveyed wanted to work from their homes. Participants also said remote working led to higher productivity and a better work-life balance. And we've heard from our Taoiseach Leo Varadkar saying that remote working legislation should be in place by the end of September, the latest. I'm joined now by Richard Grogan. He is a solicitor specialising in employment law and dispute resolution at Richard Grogan and Associates. Good afternoon, Richard.
Good afternoon to you.
With your expertise, can you see this remote working legislation being in place by the end of September?
Well, if what we've seen so far is all we're going to get by the end of September, it's going to result in a huge amount of litigation that's unnecessary, because an awful lot of things just have not been addressed, even in the draft legislation we've seen to date. That's the problem with it.
Richard, let our listeners know so far what is in that draft legislation and the main parts that are missing, the basics, because there's so many things that you don't think of until they're brought to your attention and they seem so obvious.
Well, the legislation, the draft legislation is fairly straightforward in that it is that you can apply for remote working, and if you don't get it, then you can go to the WRC and they can award you remote working, and they can give you compensation up to 4 weeks' wages. Now, that's what it's there, but it doesn't cover an awful lot of the issues that employment lawyers around the country are tearing our hair out about.
Now, what are the main ones for you that you'd be tearing your hair out about?
Well, the one that's coming up is that if somebody wants to work from home and an employer says, well, I want to have the place assessed for health and safety purposes, is that going to be allowed? Now, it would appear that it's going to have to be allowed, regardless as to whether the minister puts it in the legislation or not. If a health and safety report comes out saying, no, this premises is not suitable, then the employee is going to have to go and get their own health and safety expert. And that's just going to cost a huge amount of money, because the WRC is not set up to go out and do an assessment of somebody's home.
Like, how much are you looking at there if you were to have to get somebody?
Well, you're looking at a report having to be done first, and then possibly, if the employee isn't accepting that report, that specialist going to court, going down to the WRC to give evidence. So, you know, that can be €2,000 to €3,000 for the employer.
It's
unfortunately.
Yeah.
Now, on top of that, we have nothing as to what's going to happen as regards insurance.
Yeah, so, because this was something that I feel like will slip out of the minds of most people. But obviously you go to your workplace and you're insured in case anything happens there and, you know, all the rest. Technically, if you're at home between the hours of whatever it is for you, 8 to 4, 9 to 5, and something happens to you, but you are working at the time, do you then need, like, insurance, like, employer insurance for your own home?
Well, it would appear to us that probably the employer is going to need to have to put in that insurance, which means the premises will have to be assessed. The other issue then that comes up is, you know, people are going to be working from home. If they're going to be working from home, in a lot of jobs they're going to need to have not only the computer system, but they're also going to need a scanner, a printer, and for confidential documentation because of GDPR, probably a shredder. Now, the issue is, what happens if somebody catches their hand or their tie, which is the ties seem to be the big ones, people aren't wearing ties now, but catches a piece of clothing in it and suffers an injury. I mean, these are, you know, a shredding machine is a particularly, you know, vicious piece of machinery.
But with that, like, even you mentioning the shredding machine there, that would mean the workplace will have had to give their employee that piece of equipment. Will each piece of equipment cause different potential hazards in terms of getting insurance out at someone's home place?
Yes, because you could very well have the, if somebody is you know, working from home, and let's say they have young children, the insurers should say, may very well say, well, we need all of that equipment secured in a secure room that only the employee has access to. Now, that causes huge problems in a lot of places. That, you know, will you have, this is not putting this kind of machinery into your kitchen.
You also made a great point when I was speaking to you earlier about you've two, would say a couple, no matter who you are, two people working at home, and one passes the other. You mentioned the journalist passing maybe the accountant, and the accountant is working on the accounts for somebody who's well known, maybe a politician, maybe some sort of celebrity, and they find out a bit of information there. That could obviously cause havoc.
Well, that's a GDPR issue, yes. And this is another issue that employers are going to be looking at. And the whole issue that we have on this is that the minister and the department, and it's, I'm not blaming the minister on this, I'm blaming the department. The department have looked at remote working on the basis of people working in hubs. That's how it's going to work in government departments. And they haven't looked at the issue of people working at home. So that issue isn't going to arise in a hub, but it is going to arise at homes. And then you've got a GDPR breach. So who's going to be responsible for that? Is that the employer, or if the WRC has said, oh no, we're quite happy that somebody can work from home? Is it the WRC? Well, they're not going to be taking any responsibility for these breaches.
And I just want to ask you about the remote working hubs. They're obviously popping up in towns across this country, including here in Kildare. The insurance there, will that be covered by the actual building?
That'll be normally covered by the building. You'll be renting a spot, and it will cover for occupiers and visitors. Liability, so they'll have,
like,
that covered.
Do you, you know, Richard Grogan rents a spot from 10 to 12, Kira Noble comes in from 2 to 4, or from 11 to 1, whatever it is, and we, I guess, I sit beside you instead of sitting in the spot that I usually had rented. Does that mean, you know, our insurances are covered at the same time? It kind of gets a bit confusing.
Well, no, what's going to happen there is that would be where you are going to, they'll have the insurance in place. Not the employer you know, you'll be going into a premises that has the insurance in place.
Yeah.
That's what you'll be paying. You'll be paying for that to include the normal insurance, and you'll be wanting to make sure that if you're doing confidential stuff, that you're in a situation where you're not overlooked. You know, you'll be looking to have proper screens put up on the rest. But this is one of the problems that the department hasn't called in, we say, the employment lawyers and the GDPR lawyers and the health and safety lawyers down to look at this legislation and say, how is this going to work in practice? Because we all want it to work, but we don't want it to result in a huge amount of litigation. And that's the problem that I see coming up at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's not fair to employers, by the way, nor is it fair to an employee.
Yeah, absolutely.
The whole thing is up in the air. These things need to be cleared out. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, what is the liability if an employer says, yes, I'll let you work from home, but how do they cover off for GDPR and the rest? None of this is really been looked at or thought about.
Okay.
And that's where the problems are.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. That is Richard Grogan. We're still yet to see the official remote working legislation. We've seen a draft, as Richard spoke about there, but himself, a solicitor specialising in employment law and dispute resolution, says, you know, it's not enough. There's so much missing. Employee or employment law solicitors out there employment law solicitors out there are tearing their hair out, is how he worded it. A little earlier on this morning, we received a WhatsApp from Arlene, and her brother Peter has organised a vigil. That's in memory of 29-year-old Dylan McCarthy. Many people will know Dylan passed away over the past couple of days at Tallaght University Hospital. He was assaulted on a Monasterevin street outside a pub over Sunday night. And his parents, Eamon, Marita, his sister Orla, his partner Aoife, his extended family, obviously all mourning his loss, and I guess the community of Monasterevin would like to do something, and they are at Riverside Park in the town on Friday, tomorrow at 8 p.m. There's going to be a vigil held, and people are asked to bring a candle to remember Dylan, his family, and those affected by the tragedy. And just once again, rest in peace to Dylan McCarthy.